We have the cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your blackheads, sniff some borax, and enjoy this episode of X-1 entitled Hostess.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight, Hostess by Isaac Asimov.
I was so happy about it when I came home, almost triumphant. I dashed in the front door, peeled off my gloves, threw my hat on the side table, and tossed my coat over the back of a chair.
Well, you missed supper.
Drake, we're going to have him here.
Who here? What are you talking about?
The doctor from Hawkins' planet. Didn't you realize that was what today's conference was about?
When you say the doctor from Hawkins' planet, do you mean the Hawkins site you've got at the Institute?
Well, of course. Who else could I possibly mean?
May I ask what the devil you mean by saying we'll have him here?
Darling, the Hawkins site would like to stay at a private house somewhere where he won't be bothered with official ceremony, where he'll be able to proceed more according to his own likes and dislikes. I find it quite understandable.
Whenever you start using formal sentences, I know you're hiding extreme irritation.
Well, you don't seem to be trying to hide it at all. Well, what's the matter?
Look, I don't see where we've got room for extraterrestrial visitors.
Are you serious? He can stay in the spare room. Honestly, Drake, all we have to do is show a certain amount of adaptability.
Sure, just a little adaptability. The Hawkins site breathes cyanide. We'll just adapt ourselves to that, I suppose.
He carries cyanide in a little cylinder. You won't even notice it.
Mm-hmm. And what else is there about them I won't notice?
Nothing else. They're perfectly harmless. They're even vegetarians.
But what about us? Do we eat meat ourselves? Or will that make us look like cannibals to him? I won't live on salads to suit him, I warn you.
Drake, it means very much to me.
Well, why?
Because if he stays here for any length of time, I can study him real closely. Very little work has been done on the biology and psychology of the individual Hawkinsite or of any of the extraterrestrial intelligences. Surely you must see the opportunity. He stays here. We speak to him, watch him, observe his habits.
Look, I've spoken to men who are in charge of security groups watching various Hawkinsite missions on Earth. The missions stay in the rooms assigned to them. They don't leave for anything but the most important official business. They have nothing to do with Earthmen. It's quite obvious that they're as revolted by us as I personally am by them.
Drake, he's a doctor. He's coming here for medical research, and I'll grant you that he probably doesn't enjoy staying with human beings and will probably find us perfectly horrible. But he must stay just the same.
All right. Have it your own way. You sure you don't want any coffee?
No. Drake, you're not angry about this, are you?
No, I'm not angry.
Most of my friends had been surprised when I married Drake because they couldn't understand my marrying a policeman. I explained he wasn't simply a policeman. He was a member of the World Security Board, but most of the staff at the Institute thought it rather odd that I hadn't married a biologist or at least an anthropologist, even a chemist, but certainly not a policeman. I was waiting for Drake with some apprehension that evening as I sat in the living room. Hark Tolan, the Hawkinsite, was standing quietly in the middle of the room. He was not sitting, since he was not anatomically constructed to sit. He stood on two sets of limbs placed close together, while a third pair, entirely different in their construction, were suspended from a region that would have been the upper chest in the human being. His skin was hard, glistening, and ridged, and his face wore a distant resemblance to something alienly bovine.
Mrs. Smollett, you must forgive my English. The construction of my mouth, combined with the absence of incisors and canine teeth, is an obstacle to clear speech.
I think you speak very well.
Thank you.
My husband will be home soon, and then we'll eat.
Your husband?
Well,
husband?
Yes, you know. Mr. Smollett.
Ah, male. Of course. You must forgive me, Mrs. Smollett. Perhaps the greatest source of confusion among the five known races of the galaxy lies in the differences among them in regard to their sex life and the social institutions that grow around it.
I understand that.
The concept of husband and wife, for instance, exists only on Earth. I can achieve a sort of intellectual understanding of what that means, never an emotional one.
Dr. Tolan, I've consulted the Institute in preparing a menu, and I trust you'll find nothing in it that will upset you. Drake? Drake, is that you?
Yeah.
I'm in the living room, dear.
I suppose he's all delivered, complete.
Drake, is Dr. Hark Tolan of Hawkins Planet. Dr. Tolan, my husband.
Well, good evening, Dr. Tolan.
Mr. Smollett.
Would you care for a drink?
I'm not particularly thirsty.
On Earth, there is a custom of drinking liquids which have been fortified with ethyl alcohol. We find it stimulating.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid, then, that I must decline. Ethyl alcohol would interfere most unpleasantly with my metabolism.
Well, so it does to Earthmen, too. But I understand, Dr. Tolan. Would you object to my drinking?
Of course not.
Good. I need one. A stiff one.
He stood at the table. I tried not to look at him as he ate. His wide, lipless mouth split his face alarmingly as he ingested food, and in chewing, his large jaws moved from side to side. There was evidence of his ungulate ancestry. I found myself wondering whether he would chew his cud later, and then I was afraid that Drake would get the same idea and leave the table in disgust, but he was taking everything quite calmly.
I imagine, Dr. Tolan, that the cylinder at your side holds cyanide.
Quite so.
Pure cyanide?
I hope you are not considering possible danger. I know the gas is highly poisonous to you, and I do not need a great deal. None of it emerges, except when I actually suck at the tube, which is fixed at the corner of my mouth.
I see. And you really must have the gas to live?
Are you not a biologist, Mr. Smollett?
No, Dr. Tolan. It's merely a minor government official. My wife's friends call me a policeman. Tell me, what happens if you don't breathe cyanide? Do you, just go like that?
Not quite. The absence of it would be equivalent to slow strangulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very painful, difficult to treat. I've done some research on the problem.
I find it difficult to keep thinking of you as a doctor.
I understand what you mean. I find it difficult to think of you as a policeman.
I gather that you're not here on a pleasure trip.
No. I intend to study this queer planet you call Earth.
Queer? In what way?
It is always amazing to me to find how little you Earthmen understand your own characteristics. There are five intelligent races in the galaxy. Over and over, it is you Earthmen, more than any of the others, who are unique. Your people are the only ones which find hydrogen cyanide poisonous. Yours is the only form of intelligent life which is carnivorous. Yours is the only form of life which has not developed from the grazing animal. And most interesting of all, yours is the only form of intelligent life known which stops growing upon reaching maturity.
Well, you don't look very large, Dr. Tolan. I should say that you're an inch taller than I, which would make you 6'2". Are you young, or are you just small on Hawkins Planet?
Neither. We grow at a diminishing rate with the years, so that at my age it would take 15 years to grow an additional inch. But we never entirely stop. And, of course, as a consequence, we never entirely die.
Did you hear that, Rose?
I never knew that before.
You mean people on Hawkins Planet are immortal?
No people are truly immortal. Few of us live more than several centuries of your time. Still, it is unpleasant to think that death may come involuntarily. It is something which to us is extremely horrible.
Oh, we're quite used to it.
You Earthmen live with the thought. We do not. This is why we are disturbed to find that the incidence of inhibition death has been increasing in recent years.
What is this inhibition death?
A pathological cessation of growth. It's a wasting disease. A tragic one. And absolutely incurable. It is fatal within a year.
What causes it?
Mr. Smollett, we know nothing about the cause of the disease.
Well, then why did you come to Earth to study it?
Because, again, Earthmen are unique. They are the only intelligent beings who are immune. The inhibition death affects all other races, while Earthmen are immune. Somewhere in the biochemistry of the Earthite, there is the secret of that immunity. How interesting it would be to find it.
Well, now, look here. You can't say that Earthmen are immune. From where I sit, it looks as if the incidence is 100%. All Earthmen stop growing, and all Earthmen die. We've all got the inhibition death.
Earthmen live up to 70 years after the cessation of growth. That is not death as we know it. Your equivalent disease is rather one of unrestrained growth. Cancer, you call it.
Drake was being pleasant to Dr. Tolan. I wasn't sure whether it was for my sake or for his own. Drake has never gone out of his way to please me. Sometimes when I'm gloomy, I look at him across the table and ask myself, why did he marry me? And suddenly after dinner in the living room, Dr. Tolan asked a question which surprised me.
You are a policeman, Mr. Smollett?
Yes.
I wonder, could you show me through one of the police departments on your planet?
Well, I don't belong to a police department in exactly the way you imagine. However, I have some contacts in the New York City Department.
Would I be able to visit the Missing Persons Bureau?
Why are you interested in Missing Persons Bureau?
Because there again, you are unique. There's no such thing as a missing person on our planet. We're always aware of each other's exact location, no matter where on the planet we might be.
Can you feel such awareness even now, on Earth?
You mean across space? No, I'm afraid not. But you see the importance of the matter. All the uniqueness of Earth should be linked. If the lack of this sense can be explained, perhaps the immunity to inhibition death can be also. Tell me truthfully, Mr. Smollett, if Mrs. Smollett were to leave this room and enter another without your having seen her do so, would you really not be aware of her location?
I really would not.
Amazing. Please do not be offended by the fact that I find it revolting as well.
Drake? Drake?
Yes, I'm awake.
Why were you talking about the inhibition death to Dr. Tolan?
I'm taking an interest in your work, Rose. You've always wanted me to take an interest.
I'd rather you weren't sarcastic.
Rose, I'm tired. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
No, right now.
I want no questions from you and no interference. You do your job and I'll do mine.
The nature of my job is open and known.
The nature of my job isn't, by definition, but I'll tell you this. Our six-legged friend is here in this house for some definite reason. You weren't picked as biologist in charge for any random reason. 2 days ago, he'd been inquiring about me at the commission. But that's my job, and I won't discuss it with you any further. Do you understand?
No. But I won't question you if you don't want me to.
All right, then go to sleep.
I lay stiffly on my back, and the minutes passed and the quarter hours. I was trying to fit the pieces together. One picture remained clear in my mind. It hovered over me mockingly. At the end of the evening, the Hawkinsite had turned to me just before he left the room.
Good night, Mrs. Smollett. You're a most charming hostess.
I wanted to giggle then. How could he call me a charming hostess? To him, I must have been a horror, a monstrosity with too few limbs and too narrow a face. But then I saw Drake. He turned white. For one instant, his eyes had burned with something that looked like terror. I'd never before known Drake to show fear of anything. And the picture of that instant of pure panic remained with me until all my thoughts finally sagged into the oblivion of sleep. I remember one question that nagged at me through the haze. Why did he marry me?
I found your missing persons bureau interesting in that the large majority of missing persons are males.
Oh, well, that's not mysterious, Dr. Tolan. You simply didn't realize the economic setup we have on Earth.
My wife is an example of the minority of women who are capable of making their own way in the world.
Would you call the Missing Persons Bureau of New York a fair sampling of such cases in the planet at large?
Yes, I should think so.
Is there then an economic explanation for the fact that since interstellar travel has been developed, the percentage of young males among the missing is more pronounced than ever?
Well, that's even less of a mystery than the other. Nowadays, a runaway can hop the nearest space freighter. They're always looking for crewmen. No questions asked.
It's almost always young men. Their first year of marriage?
Well, that's just the time a man's troubles seem the greatest. If he survives the first year, there's usually no need to disappear at all.
Would it offend you if I disconnected for a period of time?
Disconnected?
It's like sleep. Oh. I hope you haven't had too exhausting a day.
It's just that I've been absorbing so many new and unusual concepts that I feel a desire for a little disconnection.
Drake, we've been sitting here for 10 minutes. Aren't you going to speak to me?
About what?
Last night you said you'd speak to me tomorrow. Well, I'm ready now.
I thought it was agreed that you wouldn't question me about my business in this matter.
I think it's too late for that. I know too much about your business by now.
What? What do you mean?
Drake, let go of my arm.
What are you talking about?
Dr. Tolan thinks that Earth is spreading the inhibition death purposely. That's it, isn't it?
Where did you get that idea?
It's true, isn't it?
I want to know exactly why you say that. Don't play games with me, Rose. This is for keeps.
Why didn't you ask Dr. Tolan? He's an outstanding worker in the field. I looked over his papers this afternoon.
And what are his theories about the origin of the disease? Try to remember, Rose.
I think he blames Earth, but I think he admits they know nothing about how the disease is spread.
I'll find out about this right now.
Drake, what are you going to do? What's that?
It's my gun. I'm going to ask him a few questions.
He ran out of the bedroom, down the corridor, towards Dr. Tolan's room. I ran after him, caught him just as he entered the door. The Hawkinsite was standing there, motionless, his eyes unfocused, his four standing limbs sprawled out in four directions as far as they would go.
Now keep quiet. He'll gradually become aware of me. Get out of here.
No, Drake. What are you doing?
Quiet. There, you see? The skin on his face is beginning to quiver. Well, that's about all, Dr. Tolan. Don't throw in connection with any of the limbs. Your sense organs and the voice box will be quite enough.
Why do you invade my disconnection chamber? And why are you armed? What do you want?
The answer to certain questions.
With a gun in your hand? Sorry, Mr. Smollett, that the duties toward a guest are so badly understood on Earth.
You're no guest of mine, Dr. Tolan. You entered my home under false pretenses.
You had better shoot. It will save time.
You are convinced that you'll answer no questions? Now, that in itself is suspicious. It seems that you consider certain answers to be more important than your life.
I consider the principle of courtesy to be very important. You as an Earthman may not understand.
Perhaps not. But I can understand one thing. Your cyanide cylinder, suppose I... Pull it out of your mouth! Rose, hold your breath until I close the valve. There. All right, Tolan. You realize what will happen to you if you don't answer the questions I'm going to ask you. Cyanide lack. It would be a most uncomfortable death. I'm only an Earthman. I can't appreciate its true horrors, but you can, can't you?
Drake, give him the cylinder. Give it back to him.
You have about 1 hour, I think, until the effects are irreversible. Talk quickly, Dr. Tolan. You'll have your cyanide cylinder back.
What are your questions?
What are your theories concerning the inhibition death? Why did you really come to Earth? What is your interest in the Missing Persons Bureau?
For years, I have been investigating the cell structure of my patients suffering from inhibition death. I've been forced to use the utmost secrecy, since the methods I used were frowned on by my people. Your society would have similar feelings against human vivisection, for instance. For this reason, I could not present the results I obtained to my fellow physicians until I had verified my theories here on Earth.
And what are they?
The inhibition death is entirely a disease of the mind.
You mean it's psychosomatic?
No, Miss Smollett, it is not psychosomatic. It is a true disease of the mind, a mental infection. My patients had double minds. Beyond and beneath the one that obviously belonged to them, there was evidence of another one, an alien mind. In short, there are not only five intelligences in the galaxy, but six. And the sixth is parasitic.
This is impossible. You must be mistaken, Dr.
Tolan. No, I'm not mistaken. One can imagine such a parasite through the course of millions of years, perhaps losing all portions of its physical being. It would become nothing but pure mind, living in some mental fashion we cannot conceive of on the minds of others, particularly on the minds of Earthmen.
Why particularly Earthmen?
Have you not surmised that the sixth intelligence is a native of Earth? Mankind from the beginning has lived with it, has adapted to it, is unconscious of it. It is why the higher species of terrestrial animals, including man, do not grow after maturity and eventually die. And it is what is called natural death. It is the result of this universal parasitic infestation. Where Earthmen could survive the infection for decades with little harm, we others die a quick death, within a year. Give me back my cylinder. You have your answer.
What about the Missing Persons Bureau?
Drake, look at his eyes. Give it back to him.
As we are not well adapted to the intelligence that infests man, neither is it well adapted to us. It can live on us, but it cannot reproduce, with ourselves alone as the source of its life. The inhibition death is therefore not directly contagious among our people.
What are you implying, Dr. Tolan?
The Earthman remains the prime host for the parasite, and an Earthman may infect one of us if he remains among us. But the parasite, once it is located in an intelligence of the outer worlds, must somehow return to an Earthman if it expects to reproduce. We are infected and reinfected as the parasites return to Earth and come back to us via the mind of Earthmen who travel through space.
And the missing persons?
Are the intermediate hosts. The masculine terrestrial mind seems better suited for their purpose. But once reproduction has been taken care of, the infested male leaves by spaceship for the outer worlds. He disappears.
But this is impossible. What you say implies that the parasite mind can control the actions of its host. That can't be, or we would have noticed their presence here on Earth.
The control may be very subtle, and may moreover be exerted only during the period of active reproduction. I simply point to your Missing Persons Bureau. Why do the young men disappear? I'm quite ill now, cyanide lack, and I cannot speak much longer.
And you alone, of all your people, have any knowledge of this theory of yours?
I alone. You will give me back my cyanide cylinder now. I have become quite weak.
Sure. Sure, Dr. Tolan.
Drake! Drake!
Rose.
No, no!
Rose, come out of here. Come on now. Come on.
He's dead, you shot him.
Outside. Out. Quiet, Rose, quiet. I told you to have nothing to do with this.
Let me go. I want to go. I want to go.
Why? Because of something it was my job to do? You heard what that creature was saying? You suppose I could allow him to return to his world and spread those lies? They'd believe him. What do you think would happen then? They would have to kill us all to stop that disease.
What he said wasn't a lie. It was true.
Oh, come on, now you're hysterical. You need sleep.
I know what he said was true because the Security Commission knows all about the same theory and knows it's true.
Why do you say a thing like that?
Because you let it slip yourself.
Now, sit down. Sit down. Well, so I gave myself away, did I? When?
You turned white when Hark Tolan referred to me as a charming hostess. Hostess has a double meaning, Drake. A host is one who harbors a parasite.
I had no idea I was so transparent. Look, Rose, I've done my best to keep you out of this.
The truth can't be held down forever. Somebody else will find out. You can't kill them all.
We know that, too. We have no choice.
Why? Why can't we combine with the other intelligences and wipe out the parasite?
No, you don't understand. Hark Tolan was right. Man and his prehistoric ancestors have been living with this parasitic intelligence for uncounted ages. We've not only become adapted to it, we've become dependent on it. It is no longer a case of parasitism. It's a case of mutual cooperation. You biologists have a name for it.
What are you talking about? Symbiosis?
Yes, exactly. We have a disease of our own, remember? It is a reverse disease, one of unrestrained growth. You've mentioned it already as a contrast to inhibition death. It's all very well to say that if we could remove the parasite, we would have eternal growth in life, but it's impossible for us. If for any reason the parasitic intelligence, as Hark Tolan calls it, does leave the human body, or if its relationship to the human mind is in any way impaired, growth does take place, but not in an orderly fashion. We call the growth cancer, and there you have it. There's no way of getting rid of the parasite. We're together for all eternity. To get rid of their inhibition death, extraterrestrials must first wipe out all vertebrate life on Earth. There is no other solution for them. So we must keep knowledge of it from them. Now do you understand?
He got the body out of the apartment. I sat there numbly. He lied to me. Cancer could not be a disease that was an expression of lost ability for normal growth. Cancer attacked children while they were still growing. It could even attack embryonic tissue. Cancer had nothing to do with the presence or absence of normal growth. Its absence would not cause cancer. Drake lied, but no one would believe me. The young men who disappeared were usually in the first year of their marriage. Whatever the process of reproduction of the parasite intelligence was, it must involve close association with another parasite. The type of close and continuous association, as in the case of newly married couples. The parasite could control actions. I'd report them both, Drake Smollett and Hark Tolan, to the Missing Persons Bureau. But they'd never find them, for they'd be out in space. I wanted to weep, but I couldn't. I was dry-eyed, and it was painful. I'd looked for the answers to so many questions, and I'd found them all. I even found the answer to the question I thought had no bearing on the subject. I finally learned why Drake had married me.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was an NBC Radio Network production.
To see those filthy drunk kids in machines get their comeuppance, and she wants it now. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of the Crime Club entitled The Grey Mist Murders.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. The Grey Mist Murders. Yes, we have that Crime Club story for you. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on this shelf. Here it is. The Gray Mist Murders by Constance and Gwynt Little. The very intriguing story of a pleasure cruise that became a floating horror. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It was late afternoon, and Robert Arnold's ocean-going yacht, the Gray Mist, was already 8 hours out of San Francisco and traveling under full steam toward Honolulu. Two of his friends, Peter Condit and Phyllis Marsh, stood by the rail in the bow of the ship, absorbed as they watched the water go by. Then, a few moments later...
Nothing to say, Peter?
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry, Phyllis. I was just thinking.
What about?
We ought to get married.
What?
All of us. A triple wedding. Carla Bray and Bob Arnold, you and Chet Gordon and...
And you and Kay Bayless?
Uh-huh. Today, Bob could get the skipper to do the honors.
You're slightly off the beam, Peter.
I know it sounds crazy, but why not be crazy for a change?
Not with my life. I believe in waiting and watching.
What for? You're going to marry Chet anyway, aren't you?
Maybe.
Oh, aren't you sure?
I don't know.
But you're engaged.
So?
Peter?
Huh?
It's Kay. Now you can ask her how she feels about a double wedding.
All right. Stand by and watch the reaction. Okay, darling. Come over here. I've got something to ask you.
After me, sweetheart.
Oh,
what the... Hey. Well, Peter, wouldn't you like to know what that was for?
What's the idea, Kay?
Don't you ever try to make a fool of me again.
What are you talking about?
Your ex-heartthrob, Peter, Sally Grable.
Huh?
She's on this boat. And wherever she is, she's doing a good job of hiding.
No, now, listen.
We've been sailing for 8 hours, and I haven't seen her. Now, where would she be, Peter?
Now, she isn't. You must have had a bad dream.
She is, and I didn't.
But, Kay, if you didn't see her, how do you know?
This handkerchief was where it shouldn't be.
Oh?
Recognize it, darling?
Let me see it.
Be gentle, or you'll rub off the monogram.
Where'd you get it, Kay?
I found it on the other side of the deck. It was hugging the rail for dear life.
Well, I'll be...
Of course, dear. The sooner the better.
Wait a minute.
Yes?
Where's the rest of the crowd?
Your laugh, mate.
Cut it out, Kay. Where's Bob and Chet and Carla?
In the lounge, I suppose, giggling over their brandy.
Then you showed them this handkerchief, huh?
Oh, yes, and they were so surprised.
Thanks. I'll see you later. We'll soon find out who's kidding whom.
Oh, it's not really so funny, Kitty.
You didn't mind laughing, Carla, did you?
Oh, just to be sensible, Bob. Well, I've got things to do.
Where are you going, Annie?
Down to my cabin. Got a notion I'd like to bathe.
She really means it, Chet.
Oh, no, Bob, that's not what I'm laughing about. Every time I think of that look on Kay's face when she held up that handkerchief.
Oh, it was like murder.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Pete, what a beating you must be taking now. Sorry for it. Chet, did you plant that handkerchief?
Well, no, but I thought it was you.
Oh, it wasn't.
Carla?
No, she doesn't go in for practical jokes.
Well, neither does Phyllis. Say.
I don't believe it, Chet. She can't be on board the Gray Mist.
Yeah, but if she is... If she is...
Skipper, this is Mr. Arnold. Did a young lady come on board this morning before I arrived at my party?
What? Well, why didn't you tell me?
Oh, very well.
She's here, huh?
He thought she was a guest. He told the steward about her.
All right, you lugs, where is she?
The voice of doom.
Now, listen, Pete.
You and Chet have got Sally stored away on this boat someplace. Now, bring her out.
All right, but we'll have to find her first.
Oh, why did you do it?
Oh, now, look,
Pete. Shut up, Chet. I'm talking to the master now, the boy who handed out the invitation.
Sally wasn't invited, Pete. I don't know how she found out about this trip, but she's here, and we'll have to do something about it.
Sure. Well, just do me one favor. Keep her out of sight.
You hot-headed fool. Why don't you listen?
Keep her in her cabin locked up until we get to Honolulu. Will you do that one little thing for me?
Okay.
Thanks. And after that, you can laugh yourself sick. Because Kay and I are checking out as soon as we dock.
Well, how about a song, Bob?
fool.
Something like Auld Lang Syne. Should old acquaintance be forgot and...
Shut up, Chip. Let's look for Sally.
Bob!
I could do that with another song.
Bob!
Carla!
Bob!
Oh, what's the matter? Carla!
She's in my cabin. In my cabin.
Sally?
Yes, in the closet on the floor. And there's a cord around her neck.
What?
I opened the closet to get a dress for tonight. And I...
Chet. Oh, Chet, Bob. Stay here with Carla. I'm going downstairs. Yes, yes, Dr. Lang. Come down here right away. Carla Bray's cabin.
Bob, Chet, what are you doing here?
Well, I thought I might be able to help.
How's Carla?
Oh, she's all right. Phyllis came into the lounge and I... Well, there's no doubt of that, is there?
Ah.
Oh, poor kid. To wind up like that. Who could have done it, Bob?
You're asking me.
Yeah, but why here? In Carla's room.
Sally wasn't killed in here, Chet.
What?
She'd been dead for hours when she was planted in that closet.
Hours? What are you talking about?
Take a look at the body.
Okay. Yeah. That could be rigor mortis.
It is, Chet. I sent for Dr. Lang. He'll know more about the exact time she was killed.
Yeah, sure.
But I got a few ideas of my own. Sally was dead before we pulled her out of the harbor.
Say, wait a minute. You're going too fast for me.
Yeah, that's right, Chet. Somebody, one of our little crowd, saw Sally first, and that was the end of our Sally.
Yeah, but why? And why park the body here after keeping it hidden for a whole day? Say, Bob, is somebody trying to frame Carla?
That doesn't make sense.
No, it's cockeyed. Why, everybody knows that Carla and Sally were the best of friends. It was Carla who tried to keep the big romance going between Pete and Sally.
That's right. It doesn't make sense.
Well, hey.
Huh?
It's just an idea, so don't breathe fire. You didn't ask Sally to join the party.
I said I didn't.
All right. But how do you know Carla didn't?
Ah, see. Here, Chet.
All right. Just to get her friend and Pete together again. Some people call it loyalty, you know.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chet.
All right. Now, suppose Kay found out what Carla had done. And she had visions of losing Pete to Sally. You know how she worked to take him away from her.
So she tied a cord around her neck, huh?
Well, I don't like to be the one to say so, Bob.
And then dragged the body from somewhere to this room?
But there's nothing a woman likes less than being outsmarted by another woman.
Okay, Chet. Will you ask Carla to meet me in the library in 20 minutes?
All right, sure.
I'm going to wait here for Dr. Lang. Then I'm going to find out who started this thing and why.
Would it be?
Carla, baby, what's the matter?
On the library floor, Chet. It's Bob. He's been killed.
Holy. Somebody run for a doctor, quick.
Who did it, Carla? I don't know, Kay. I was going to meet him. Did you, sweetheart? Kay. It just occurred to me that Carla's quite a finder, Phyllis.
Cut it out, Kay. This is no time for comedy.
No, Peter, just for murder. You're a fool, Kay. What reason would Carla have for killing Bob? One never knows, dear. There are so many reasons why a woman should kill a man. And one of them can be another woman. Oh, why don't you shut up and dry up? I'm only thinking about Sally. I wonder who took her along for the ride. Was it Bob?
Let's get out of here, Kay.
The boyfriend of the best friend. The oldest story in the world, you know. Pay no attention to her, Carla. Ever since she found Sally's handkerchief.
Carla.
I haven't heard a word she said, Phyllis. Mm-hmm. If she only knew how little she means to me. Yeah. To pick on me at a time like
Carla,
this.
Carla. It's all right.
What's all right? Bob.
Come here, honey.
Bob. Oh, darling, you are all right.
Well, not quite. I still have a headache.
Oh, my darling. We've been so busy arguing about who killed you, I didn't think to look.
Yeah, it takes quite a lot to crack solid ivory, but somebody tried awful hard. Come on in, gang.
You look pretty well, considering.
Yeah, we might as well all be together, even though it's not going to be a week.
What happened, Bob?
Well, I'm glad to see you're interested, Pete.
Now, look!
I should have done that when I opened the door. Well, to see who was waiting behind it with the Empire State Building in one hand.
Kay seems to think it was Carla, Bob.
So I heard it, and I was coming out of the fog. The reasons were very interesting.
Bob!
Relax, Carla. They were just interesting, not true.
Well, shall we play 20 questions now? We shall. Chet, when you told Carla to meet me here in 20 minutes, who was present?
Everybody?
Yes. And then everybody disappeared.
Yeah, I went to the billiard room.
Alone, Bob?
I went to my stateroom to rest.
How about you, Pete?
I went for a walk on deck with Kay.
Is that right, Kay?
You don't think he's lying, do you?
It's possible that he isn't, but somebody is.
How about you, Carla? You had 20 minutes to kill.
I went to the game room, Kay.
Why, of course. And the game room is right next to the lounge.
Carla, were you able to see the stairway?
I didn't see anyone go down, Bob. But then...
Yeah?
Well, I wasn't watching it. I was walking around.
But the game room, dear, is where you play games.
I've had enough of you, Kay. And everything that goes with you.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. There's going to be no hair pulling while I'm around.
She's got no right to keep throwing mud at me, Chet.
Yeah, I know.
She killed Sally and tried to kill Bob. And the more she tries to put the blame on me, the more I'm convinced of it.
All right.
It's not all right at all. She's not going to call me a murderer.
Stop it, Kay. Pete, get her out of here.
Nobody has to get me out. I'll see you all later.
That means around dinner time, if I know Kay. I'm sorry about the rumpus, Bob.
Okay, Pete.
I think I'll go up to the bar and start drowning myself in the best liquor you've got.
Either I'm crazy or this boat is jinxed. We start out on a cruise, the best of friends, and before the end of the day, we find that we're the worst enemies. Come on, Phyllis. Let's go up on deck and go haywire.
I'm going to my cabin, Chet.
Huh?
I'm very tired.
Oh. Okay. I'll go down to the boiler room and cool off.
That's Kay.
Ah, forget it, please. Carla, did you invite Sally on this trip?
Did I what?
When you look surprised, honey, you're really beautiful.
I'm not surprised, Bob. I'm angry. I had a lot of respect for Sally.
You don't have to say another word. I'm convinced.
But you thought of it.
Oh, darling, I apologize. Now let's go and search all the cabins, including the empty ones. We might trip over something like a clue to the murderer. Then we'll know who's who and who paid her off.
Where have you been for the last hour, Kay?
Around. Pull up a deck chair, Peter, and make believe we know each other.
I've been looking for you.
How nice. I hope you weren't too disappointed when you peeped in my cabin.
What was the idea, Kay?
Oh? Did I have an idea?
That lousy scene you made outside the library. Why did you accuse Carla?
I don't like her.
It was the dirtiest thing I ever listened to.
But I'm very fond of you, Peter. And I wouldn't like to lose you to the hangman.
What's that?
Oh, you're wonderful. Why don't we get married and end this beautiful romance?
What did you mean, Kay, about the hangman?
You killed Sally.
Now listen.
That's all right. I don't mind. I'm only sorry you didn't kill Bob Arnold, too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But I do. After Chet told Carla to meet Bob in the library, we, didn't go for a walk on the deck.
You keep your mouth shut about that, Kay.
But you said we did. And that wasn't the truth, was it, darling?
If you say one word to Bob or anybody else...
What'll you do? Kill me, too?
Good grief!
There, there. I'll keep your secret.
But I tell you, Kay, I had nothing to do with this business today. I didn't know Sally was on board until you showed me that handkerchief.
Your piccolo's out of tune.
What are you trying to do? That's what I want to know. What are you trying to do?
Sit down, and keep your temper. Because if I start screaming... There, that's a good boy.
I didn't kill Sally.
No one will ever know from me. Would you like me to prove it?
How?
Well, a wife can't give evidence against her husband.
You haven't got anything on me.
Don't be silly. All I have to do is talk, and the only alibi you've got becomes a witness to the prosecution.
Yes?
Yes. Because whoever tried to kill Bob killed Sally. And for the sake of the record, the marriage record, I was with you on both occasions, protecting my future.
Bob, we've been trotting around from cabin to cabin and I'm tired.
Only three more empties to go, Carla. Sally must have been in one of them.
This is like hunting for a ghost. And when it happens to be the ghost of your best friend...
This is it.
Luggage. Sally's luggage.
It must be. No one was checked into this room by me.
Bob.
What is it, Carla?
I don't think I can go through with it. Will you excuse me, please?
Oh, sure, honey. I should have thought of it myself. You go up on deck and get some air. I'll look around here, and if I find anything interesting...
What's the matter?
Her handbag on the dresser. It's a funny position to leave a handbag in.
Standing on end.
That's a tip-off, Carla. There's something in it that Sally wanted us to find.
What do you mean?
She's a very smart girl, and she might have left her handbag this way so it'd be noticed.
Bob, just before she was killed?
Maybe she didn't know she was going to be killed. But she was frightened. She did some quick thinking.
What's that you're reading?
Good Lord, this is one thing I didn't expect to find.
Well, what is it?
A letter to Sally. Read it.
I've made up my mind, so let's not mess things up. Stay off the gray mist. Chet. Chet!
Yeah, of all people.
Chet and Sally? Not a word to anybody.
There's no doubt about it, Carla. It's his handwriting top to bottom. Al, there's only one thing to do.
But we won't do it now.
What?
Phyllis.
Not now, will we? Please give me that letter.
I'll do nothing of the kind.
Carla, don't be foolish. You're an old friend. And I'm very fond of you.
You wouldn't dare use that gun.
I would. I'm engaged to marry Chet. And if I have to shoot you to get that letter, I'll shoot you.
There's no use arguing, Carla. Give it to her.
But she'll destroy it.
There's nothing we can do about it now. Give it to her.
Well, all right.
Thanks. I'll explain some other time.
Bob, has she gone out of her mind?
I don't know. But if sticking by your man means that you're out of your mind, then she is.
Why, you sound as if you admire her.
Me? I don't even admire myself. Let's go upstairs. I'd like to have a chat with Chet.
You know, Bob, this is the nicest bar I've ever been in. It's the cleanest, too. You ought to get a medal for it.
Snap out of it, Chet. If you're playing drunk.
Sure, I'm playing. You and Carla say I'm a murderer, and that makes me want to play some more. Where's the letter I'm supposed to have written?
Phyllis took it away from us.
Phyllis, huh? She's some girl. She's one in a billion. And, you know, the days of the little millions are gone forever. Goodbye forever. Goodbye forever.
Bob will never get any pension,
won't we? Give me that pitcher of ice water.
Goodbye. 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 Here, goodbye. Goodbye.
Now
goodbye. Goodbye. Hey. That's cold.
Not as cold as you're going to be if you don't start making sense.
So what's the big idea?
We want to know about you and Sally.
Me? What are you talking about?
Don't you remember a thing we said, do you?
Well, you said it. Yeah, a letter that Phyllis took.
That you wrote to Sally, telling her to stay off this boat.
Oh, no, Carla, I never wrote one word to Sally. Oh, you gotta believe me.
We found it in her handbag, Chet.
And the handwriting was yours.
You know what, Giddies? I think there's a lunatic on board.
How about it, Chet?
No, I mean it, Bob. Look, what happened? First, Sally's found in the closet of Carla's room. And then you're conked for no reason at all, and now then this letter of mine.
Tell us about that, pal.
But I didn't write it. I haven't seen it. But I can tell you it's a forgery.
That's always convenient.
No, Carla, I'm not lying honest. Look, Bob, you know me for a long time. You know my handwriting. Could you imitate it?
That's not the point, Chet.
Well, could you or couldn't you?
Yes, if I wanted
to. Well, so could Carl and so could anybody. It's the easiest handwriting in the world to imitate. It's like a schoolboy's.
Well, will you get that letter from Phyllis?
I'll try, if she's still got it. And I certainly hope she has.
Bob, did he put one over on us?
I don't know, Carla. I wonder.
Well, you want to be a detective. And you know, a good detective has to take lessons. Good lessons.
Huh?
Would you like to have a lemon fizz, darling? Or just a fizzle?
Peter.
Huh? Oh, Phyllis. Can you play billiards?
I want to talk to you.
All right. What about?
I overheard what Kay said to you a little while ago.
Snooping, huh?
I didn't mean to, Peter.
Let's go out on deck.
I want you to understand one thing.
When we get outside, Phyllis.
Very well.
Now, what do you want?
The truth.
You too.
Bob and Carla found that letter in Sally's handbag.
What letter?
The one you wrote in Chet's handwriting after you killed Sally.
Is this something new?
There's no use denying it, Peter. You didn't want Sally to come on this boat. And when you found she was here, you killed her and tried to make it look as though Chet had done it.
Who's got that letter now, Phyllis?
I took it from Carla. I had to use force, but I took it.
I'd like to see it.
You can't.
Why not?
I destroyed it.
Why, you dumb cook. What did you do a thing like that for?
There was going to be no evidence against Chet.
No evidence against Chet.
Or against you. Peter.
Have you got any idea what you've done? Only one person had a reason for killing Sally and wanting to kill Bob.
It wasn't Chet.
No, no. Who's talking about him? It was Kay.
Kay?
She thought Bob had invited Sally to make this trip. You saw what she did when she found that handkerchief. But she's not as smart as she thinks. She put on the mad act, but Sally was already dead, and she killed her. But tonight, when she tried to put the blame on me...
Peter, do you know what you're saying?
What she said about me. Only this is the truth. I know it. All Kay wants is money, and I have it. She charmed me away from Sally, made me think she loved me. I fell for her like a ton of saplings. But all she was angling for was money.
But I always thought that Kay was well off.
She hasn't got a dime. For the last 2 months, she's been gambling with my money. And I was going to ask her to marry me. Today. A triple wedding.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
What's the matter with you? Don't you believe me?
No.
All right. Let's form a posse. We'll beat through this boat till we find Kay. And then I'll make her tell the truth about everything, including murder. She's got to be in her cabin, Phyllis. She's nowhere else on this boat.
But she doesn't answer, Peter.
That's just her way of being cute. Well, I'm not waiting. See here, Kay. Oh, no. No!
Just like Sally.
We better get Bob. Remember, Phyllis, you were with me.
Is she dead?
Nobody ever looked like that and wasn't. Come on, let's get Bob.
I think that's all, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Dr. Lang. Will you take care of the details? I'm going into the library to join my friends.
If you want me to make any chemical tests...
I'll call you, or I'll bring the murderer to you. I think we've got all the evidence we need.
I hope so, Mr. Arnold.
Yeah.
Bob.
Sit down, Carla. Everybody sit down. Kay's been dead about an hour. Anybody have an alibi? No? Well, that's good, because I don't care about alibis this time. All I want's a show of hands.
What do you mean, Bob?
I want to see everybody's hands, Chet.
What for?
Have you got any reason not to show me yours?
Well, no. Here, look at them. I just washed them 15 minutes ago.
Both sides, Chet.
Okay. Up. Down. Do I pass?
How about you, Pete?
Well, I don't mind if this is a new way to tell fortunes.
It is. The kind of fortune that ends with, I now pronounce sentence of death. You're next, Phyllis. May I see your hands, please?
All right. I wish I knew why.
Carla?
Yes, Bob?
Your hands.
Here. Don't worry. You won't find any blood on mine.
I wasn't looking for blood, exactly.
What were you looking for?
I don't understand. Someone in this room is a murderer, a strangler. And Dr. Lang found the evidence that should convict.
What evidence, Bob?
Pieces of skin, Pete, under two of Kay's fingernails. She scratched her killer and she... I reach for your neck, Phyllis.
Well, no reason. I was just going to loosen my scarf.
Why don't you take it off? Isn't it sort of warm in here?
I'll just loosen it.
What are you hiding?
Dog!
Hey, you got one heck of a nerve. Give her back that scarf.
Okay, Chet, after she explains those two scratches on the side of her neck...
She doesn't have to explain anything to
I'm
you.
I'm afraid she does to all of us. How did you get those scratches on your neck, Phyllis?
Bob, leave her alone.
You've got them while you were twisting the cord around Kay's neck, didn't you? She reached up while you were standing behind her and clawed at you, trying to get hold of your hair so she could pull your head down. Isn't that right, Phyllis?
You've got no proof.
So that's what you want. All right. Dr. Lang has the skin that came off that neck. He's ready to make any test he has to.
He's not going to make any test, Bob.
You're licked, Phyllis. That gun can't help you now.
Why doesn't somebody try to take it away from me?
Phyllis. Oh, no.
Yes. Why doesn't somebody try? Because you all want to live. You too, Chet. Even now.
Oh, Phyllis, why did you do it?
I hated them both. but Kay more than Sally because she was going to marry Peter.
What? Are you kidding?
No, Chet. I never loved you. You just pestered me. And I... Did you know I tried to get rid of you, too? I wrote that letter to Sally right after I killed her. And then I fixed everything so that it would be found. That was smart of me, wasn't it?
Phyllis.
Don't be foolish, Bob. Don't come too close. I had everything planned. Kay was going to disappear tonight. And after a while, Peter, you wouldn't have cared. I was going to show you how much I loved you.
Oh, we've got to do something. She'll kill us all.
Sit tight, Pete.
But I made a mistake. And it was just as well. Bob told me to take cabin G. I thought he said D. And there was Sally. Would you like to know what she told me?
Of course, Phyllis.
She said she came on board to take Peter away from Kay. Nobody knew she was there. I promised to keep her confidence. And when she turned round to unpack...
Why did you put her body in my room?
Sally couldn't be dead without being seen, Carla. And your room was so close. Just across the hall.
But why did you try to frame me, Phyllis? I never did anything to you.
Didn't you? You kissed me and I hated you. That was a mistake, too. I didn't realize it until I heard Kay talking to Peter, accusing him of the murder. Then I knew that you had no reason to kill Sally. But Peter did. And if I could convince him, the way that Kay was trying to convince him, that he couldn't live without marrying me, I could...
All right, Pete.
Light! Get the light on! Somebody get the light on!
What? Oh, Phyllis.
She's killed herself.
No, Carla. It's just a flesh wound. But she'll never have another chance to kill anybody, including herself.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, The Gray Mist Murders, based on a story by Constance and Gwyneth Little. Stedman Coles did the radio adaptation. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Sidney Smith played Robert Arnold. Helen Shields was Phyllis Marsh. Sherling Oliver was Peter Condit. Joan Alexander was Kay Bayless. Elaine Kent played Carla Bray. And Chet Stratton was Chester Gordon. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very exciting story of a portrait in black that became a study in murder. It's called Death Cuts a Silhouette by D.B. Olson. In the meantime... Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we look for you next week. One more thing. Cancer strikes on the average one of every two families. Help strike back. Support the American Cancer Society's programs of research, education, and service. Give generously today.
This program came from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.